This is not my space here tonight. I'm just the segue to our keynote speaker. Nevertheless, it's important to reflect upon all the contributions of those who are here tonight. Our speaker tonight has been in the community for only 8-9 months, and yet has made an immediate and important impact on our community. I'm sure he's going to say this tonight, and I'm going to take part of his speech. But as a Kohen, as somebody who's a Kohen, one would think that there are limited opportunities for engagement in terms of this particular ASIC. Nevertheless, it takes a very sensitive and special person to know exactly what to say and how to show proper support for those who are involved physically in the ASIC of Tara and the Chevra Kadisha. Rabbi Dr. Abramowitz is somebody who is sensitive, who is emotionally intelligent, and really is a source of great support to me, to the shul, and to the entire community. And really, it's a kavod to have him as a partner personally, and I think all of us will see, in Mirtz Hashem, for many years to come, the impact that he will directly have, not just on the community, but also on this chevra in particular. And it's really a kavod tonight to hear words of Torah, chizuk, from Rabbi Dr. Yaakov Abramowitz.
Thank you very much to Rabbi Galer, Rishus, the Marad Asra, all the Rabbanim. I want to thank Rich Miller not just for inviting me here to speak, but really for everything that he does for the Kehillah, for the Chevra, really for everyone. I'm not looking forward to any accidental calls. Hopefully this wasn't an accident. But really, Rishus, all of you, the Rabbanim, the leaders, the Chevra and their families, those who have really put Klal Yisrael on your backs to really truly put others first. I'm sincerely overwhelmed, humbled, honored to be here, not only because I'm probably the youngest person here and the least experienced person here. As mentioned, I'm also a Kohen. What am I doing here? Perhaps I was called to speak tonight because I have the freshest perspective. The newest comer, not just to the neighborhood, but also to this chevra. So many people who I recognize, who I've seen but had no idea were involved in this Melechas HaKodesh. It's a beautiful thing, the humility, working behind the scenes, without looking for any fanfare. It's an absolutely overwhelming feeling for me to be here, of gratitude, of humility, and great honor. The most common reason given why Zion Adar was chosen as a day of honoring the Chevra Kadisha and this very important work is based on the Gemara in Sota and Daf Yud Daled. The Gemara is talking about the idea of the Halachta Bedrachav, the mandate for us to act in a godly way, to emulate the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Gemara describes the mitzvos that Hashem does that we are supposed to emulate. And the Gemara says that the idea of burying the dead is something HaKadosh Baruch Hu did as well. When Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, the Pasuk says, Vayikbor oso bagai. Moshe died, and he buried him in the valley. He buried him. Moshe died, and he buried him. Who's he? We know who him is. Moshe, who passed away, was buried. Who did the burying? And the Gemara in Sota and Daf Yud Daled says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on Zion Adar, buried Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the day, this is the lesson of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself getting involved in Gvura. And the ultimate, the Halachta Bedrachav, whoever's behind the pillar, I can still see you. The ultimate, the halachta bedracha for a person to emulate the ways of Hashem, to engage in kavura. However, that is not the only interpretation of this pasuk. If you look at Rashi at the very end of the Torah, in Parshas Vezos HaBracha Vayikbar Oso Bagai, Rashi quotes this Gemara. One interpretation indeed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the one who buried Moshe Rabbeinu. And Rashi quotes another approach. Vayikbar Oso Bagai, Rashi quotes from Rabbi Yishmael, sometimes the word es, Oso, could mean a person doing something to himself, a reflexive action. Vayikbar oso bagai, Rashi quotes, perhaps Moshe Rabbeinu buried himself. Vayikbar oso bagai, Moshe Rabbeinu buried himself in the valley at the end of his life. why would the Torah write it this way? The Torah could have said, Vayikbor es atzmo. The Torah acts like Moshe is burying someone else, or someone else is doing the burying. And Rashi says from Rabbi Yishmael, sometimes es could mean doing something to yourself, even though it sounds like it's doing something for someone else. Rabbi Pinchas Gross, who is a rabbi in Baltimore, has a beautiful idea. There, Rashi, at the end of the Torah, gives another couple examples from Rabbi Yishmael, where we find S also to be a reflexive act, a person where it's seemingly doing something to someone else, but actually means doing something to oneself. One of the other examples is in Parshas Naso. V'zos taras ha-nazir b'yom melos yamei nizro. This is the procedure of a nazir at the end of completing his process of being a nazir. Yavi oso, he brings him, el Pesach o'amoid, he comes to the mikdash to perform the end of the ceremony. Yavi oso, he brings him. Who's bringing the nazir at the end of his naziris? And Rashi quotes from Rabbi Yishmael again. It's reflexive. Yavi oso, he brings himself, he encourages himself to come, he brings himself to complete the process of naziris. But again, we ask the question, why would the Torah phrase it as if he's bringing an acher, when really it means bringing himself? And the Meshech Chachma on that pasuk in Parshas Naso has a phenomenal idea. He writes that a person who is becoming a nazir is trying to work on a sense of self-indulgence. A person witnesses the dangers of wine, he sees sota bekilkula, lascivious behavior, he decides, I want to swear off things that are inappropriate. I want to conquer my desires, I want to find a way to be more in control of myself. And the Torah tells us, do you know when the nazir gets the sense that the naziris is up, that he's arrived, he's been able to successfully conquer those base desires, he has been able to subdue those more inappropriate, base, inhumane ideas, it's when he can see himself as an acher. He can be outside of himself. He can view himself not by the biases that cloud our judgment, by the hunger and the lust that pushes people to do things against their values. If by the end of his naziris, it's yavi oso, he has the self-control to be outside and be objective and have that full self-control to the extent that he's like a different person viewing him or herself from a third-person perspective, that is the greatest sign they have completed successfully their naziris and they are able to now reintegrate into society a different person, a changed person. They have totally conquered any sense of arrogance, of selfishness, of ego. They're like a different person. Rabbi Gross suggested if that's the idea of that pasuk, that example of S being reflexive, let's apply it back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayikbar oso bagai, he buried himself. The Torah is telling us that Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of his life, completed this avoda. Adam Mikol Adam was able to complete the task of removing himself from himself, to view himself as an acher, to be so removed from any sense of taiva, any sense of gaiva, any sense of being too close to oneself, being too biased. He truly and sincerely felt he was dealing with an acher. He had arrived. He was able to bury himself. He buried any sense of self, and he was able to complete that task of anava. Rabbi Gross pointed to the Gemara and Nazir, not long ago in Daf Yomi. The Gemara and Nazir and Daf Yadalit says that there was a minhag for people to take on Naziris on Zayin Adar. Tosfos there, Nazir Daf Yadalit says there was a minhag for people to take on a Naziris specifically on Zayin Adar because it was the Yartzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu. What is the connection between Moshe Rabbeinu's passing and becoming a Nazir? Well, we understand, Rashi tells us, these are two of the examples. A Nazir completing the process of distancing from himself, from herself. And Moshe Rabbeinu, who perpetuated and championed that Midah. Moshe Rabbeinu, who worked on himself and his humility to the extent he was able to be outside of himself and not be blinded by his own desires. And on this day, when people were so inspired, every year Zayin Adar is an opportunity for us to think about this Midah of selflessness. This Midah of putting down the ego, this Midah of being outside oneself, for a person to truly get a perspective of what it means to be serving the klal, to put others before ourselves in our time. Psychologists refer to this idea as self-distancing. But often a person is stuck in a self-immersing perspective, where they're so close to themselves, where they get so blinded by their own struggles and their own troubles that they feel that they can't separate the wrongs that were done to them. They're constantly ruminating about what this person said to them, or this boss who slighted them, or this traffic that was all out to get them. People are so self-immersed in their own anger and their own frustration that it amplifies any struggle that they're going through. By contrast to a self-immersing perspective, psychologists talk about a self-distancing perspective, for a person to be outside themselves a little bit, to look from a bird's eye view, to actually practice seeing it from an objective perspective. Best example I like to give is, you ever had that perception? Someone's telling you about the worst thing that ever happened to them. It's the most horrible thing. And you're sitting there thinking, it's bad, but it's not that bad. See a lot of spouses nodding. It's strange to us why a person could be so bothered by something, that making it out to be the worst thing in the entire universe, and we're thinking, I get it, it's bothersome, but it's not that bad. Until it happens to you. And you're telling that same person, look what happened to me, this person was out to get me. And they're thinking, okay, I get it, it's bad, but it's not that bad. Now the other spouses are nodding. But it's this sense that when we're in it, when it's happening to us, it's so personal, it's hard to see past it. It's hard to imagine things ever getting better, and it's hard to not see it in the perspective that it was willful, it was hateful, it was spiteful, it was evil, it's the worst thing of all time, and I'll never get over it. But what if we were able to distance ourselves from ourselves? What if we were able to step outside and to see our own struggles, our own difficulties from a third lens perspective? We might just have a more objective point of view, the same way you're hearing about someone else's struggles, which are, I get it, it's not pleasant, but it's not the end of the world. What if we could do that to ourselves? And psychologists have done experiments with the following idea. What if a person used language to describe their own struggles, but in third person? Instead of a person saying, I went to work today, my boss was so terrible. Not here, obviously. I'm talking about a different person somewhere else. But what if a person, instead of saying it as I and my and me, what if they just said, you know, Abramowitz went to work one day and his other boss was being inappropriate or disrespectful or not careful about his time. Again, totally different fictitious example. But what if we could say over our problem, this person spoke bad to Abramowitz at work and the traffic was terrible for Abramowitz driving over here to live next door. But you get the idea. What if we could describe our troubles in third person as if we're describing it as what someone else has gone through? And so psychologists have studied this. What are the effects of a person who describes their own interpersonal or life challenges from a third-person perspective? And studies have shown when a person uses a self-distancing perspective while discussing something difficult, they are less angry, they are better able to reason, they are better able to problem-solve, they are more likely to reconcile, more likely to forgive other people, they are better able to move on from things that bother them. And when they ask people to describe a frustrating event in either first person or third person, and then call them back many months later, those who described the struggle in first person were still bothered by it a lot more, 8, 9, 12 months later, relative to those who had the self-distancing and described their own problems. But in third person language, the self-distancing, Yavi es atzmo, Yikbor es atzmo, only it's oso, it's not yourself, it's someone else. And when you do that, it reduces this sense of righteousness, this sense of not forgiving, this sense of anger and arrogance that comes from a person feeling, how could they do that to me? This is an opportunity all of us have with our language to think about it in this way. But Jonathan Sacks records a story that someone once reached out to Lubavitcher Rebbe with a lot of tzaros. He wrote a letter. He wrote, I'm miserable all the time. I'm sad. I'm depressed. I feel like no one cares about me. Every day, I wake up every single day with a sense of misery. I feel like I'm not accomplishing anything. I just can't get my finger on the place, and I just can't do anything. The Lubavitcher Rebbe sent back the letter without writing a single word, but just circled the first word of each sentence. I. The person has this perspective. It's about me. I. I'll be miserable. I'm not accomplishing enough. I'm sad. I'm depressed. I'm lonely. I'm not appreciated by my family and by those around me. But what if it wasn't all about us? What if we can look more objectively at our own lives? If we can have this self-distancing as opposed to self-immersing perspective? And what if we can truly feel that the things that are happening to us are in their proper context? And Zion Adar really is that day to celebrate the members of our community in West Hempstead and Oceanside, but all around the world, you all, who put others first, who had this perspective, that bury that sense of ego, that self-distance enough to know what it means to be there for people in their most challenging times. As I've been to Shiva houses, the one refrain I hear over and over again is I couldn't imagine going through this tragedy or this loss without the support of the Chevra Kadisha, of the Rabbanim. What it means to be there for people, night and day, and especially night, and isn't it always night? That's what it feels like, right? But for people, it makes a difference. And no one knows. There's no I, there's no arrogance, there's no self-promotion. Like I said, I didn't know half of the people here were in the Chevra Kadisha. More than half. It's a tremendous thing when a person serves so selflessly, without any sense of I. And it's not just the members themselves. It's their families and spouses as well. I think we have to give acknowledgement. To allow their significant others, to allow the people in their lives to be so involved in this malacha, it's also a sense of self-distancing, of putting the kehila first, of putting those who are most vulnerable first, to prioritize an acher, to look at another yid, to look at someone else in need in their most vulnerable state, chesed shel emes, and to truly feel we have an opportunity to help someone like that. Only someone with this perspective of Moshe Rabbeinu, of a nazir, the Chevra Kadisha. That's what Zayin Adar is all about. Moshe Rabbeinu buried himself. The Gemara in Brachos at the very end of Daf Samach Gimel has a phrase, Ein Divrei Torah Miskaimen Ela B'misha Meimis Atzmo Aleha. Simply translated, a person, Torah is not sustained unless a person is killing himself over it, which is a statement about Hasmada, about Yegiyah. Rav Schwab in Parshas Chukas writes, Ein Divrei Torah Miskaimen, a Torah lifestyle, Torah values cannot be sustained. Ela b'misha meimis atzmo aleha. A person tries to bury any sense of self. That's the only way for a person to truly thrive when it comes to Torah values. For a person to bury himself, for a person to bury herself, means to put aside those senses of self-interest, to truly be available at any hour, to truly be there for people in their most vulnerable, sensitive losses and struggles, and to offer them emotional support, just to give them the direction of where to go when they feel so lost. This is the midah of Moshe Rabbeinu on Zayin Adar. And perhaps the idea of fasting, for the Chevra, fasting on Zayin Adar, is a small example of what it means to self-deny, for a person to swear off something like a Nazir does. It's a microcosm, just a tiny microcosm of this great work. I end off how I started, so overwhelmed with humility, looking at this group, looking at the people and their families, and the Rabbanim and the leaders who devote themselves by nullifying themselves, by putting themselves away, as Rashi said, Vayikra Oso Bagai, the Midah of Moshe Rabbeinu, whose yahrzeit it was today. They put others first because they put themselves on the back burner to allow Klal Yisrael, to allow people most in need, to rise to the surface as being most important at all times. We look forward to the day of Macha Hashem Dima Me'al Kol Panim, and we all be zocha to witness Mashiach Tzidkenu, and Tachiyas HaMesim.